Dies ist ein Podcast der AG Critical Diversity der UdK. Ich heiße Johanna Medden, studiere künstlerisch-pädagogische Ausbildung mit dem Instrument Violine und bin die nebenberufliche Frauenbeauftragte der Fakultät Musik. In dieser Folge interviewe ich den Dirigenten Brandon Keith Brown zu den Themen Rassismus und Diskriminierung in der Musikszene und an Musikuniversitäten. Das folgende Interview ist auf Englisch.
Diversidade crítica. Kritische Diversität.
Performing with Frankfurt Radio Symphony Orchestra as the third prize winner of the 2012 Sir George Scholte International Conductors Competition, he was the standout audience favorite. That's what Norman Lebrecht said about my interview partner for today. Brandon Keith Brown, an internationally celebrated conductor who graduated from the Peabody Institute of Music in Baltimore with honors, has not only worked with acclaimed orchestras like the Rundfunk Sinfonieorchester Berlin, the Nürnberger Symphonica, or the Detroit Symphony Orchestra and the Civic Orchestra of Chicago. He's also a passionate educator to forthcoming generations of musicians and a noted social justice advocate. Today, Brandon talks about racism and discrimination in the music world and at music universities. Thank you so much for this interview. Hi, Brandon.
Hi, hello.
If you don't mind, I would just dive in directly because as one of very few Black conductors, how are you personally affected by racism?
Well, you know, we want to be careful with that question because there is a tendency for Black people to be made to bleed about specific incidences of racism. But what we're looking at is an actual system. And racism isn't a bad act. It's not an event. It's not a moral issue of bad people who do bad things to other people. It's group prejudice backed by institutional power. And it's become institutionalized. It's become covert more so than overt, meaning that it's often hidden in very insidious forms. So, of course, I could go down a long list of incidences of racism, not being allowed to go to my dressing room because they think I'm not the conductor. Or I had orchestra in Germany tried to push me off the stage and they cursed at me and the trumpet player didn't come to the general dress rehearsal and gave his solos last minute to somebody else. I've had numerous incidences as a professor in academia in the United States of racism from students, some of which I will go into today. But I think the most important thing that we need to understand about racism is not what happens to Black people, but actually what happens to white people. And we need to understand that racism is a white problem. It's not a Black problem. This is a problem with white people not understanding the impact of their whiteness on society. White people don't know what whiteness is. When you generalize about white people, one of the things that's most difficult for white people to take is when their individuality is taken away. It's a privilege. Individuality is actually a privilege, a white privilege that Black people will never have. I'm not an individual. I'm going to talk about this later. I'm a Black man before I'm a Black conductor. But when you talk about white individuality, white people get very anxious and get very nervous and very angry. White people don't realize that they are raced and that their race has an impact on other people in society, especially because white people are the highest on the racial hierarchy. And because of this, everybody caters to whiteness. And so when you're in this position where everybody caters to you, you forget that you're white and you forget the impact that you have on other people. And therefore you forget the racism that you enact. It may be intentional, it may be conscious or unconscious, but you are not able to understand the racial impact of your actions on different people of color.
So leading to my next question, allyship. We need to learn to be an ally. We need to recognize the structural discrimination. What, for you personally, personal opinion on it, what is most important for you in allyship among musicians or among people?
Well, I believe my personal opinion actually should become ubiquitous. I don't want a white allyship. The philosopher Levinas said that it's an act of violence to think that you can empathize with another human being. It's basically saying that you can understand the totality of somebody else's experience. And so you reduce somebody into sort of this nutshell. And people are much more complex. People are much more full. People are much more self-actualized than that. White allyship is basically a way for white people to look outside of themselves externally at racism and pat themselves on the back and say that, oh, I have black friends and oh, I'm down with the cause, black power, black lives movement. What we see, particularly in the United States of America, is a very passionate reaction to the fact that white people don't like the look and feel of racism. I'll say that one more time. White people don't like the look or feel of racism. It doesn't mean they're going to actually do something about it over the long term. It doesn't mean that they're going to reform the prisons. It doesn't mean they're going to invite, take down the curtain and invite black musicians into the orchestra. It doesn't mean that conducting teachers, white conducting teachers in academia, it doesn't mean that they're going to allow black students in and develop their potential as they do with white and Asian students. It doesn't mean they're actually going to do something about the fact that all of their closest intimate relationships are with white people or with white people that are with Asians, particularly who can assimilate into white populations. It doesn't mean that they're going to do something about reflecting, sitting and just reflecting in a room on how your race, white race, impacts the lives of black people and how you have denied black people opportunities. And I'm focusing on black people, not because I'm black and not because I'm being selfish. We need to focus on the lowest common denominator in racial groups. Black people in Germany face the highest rate of racism, but it has a very small population, so people don't care. Also, there's no racial census, which means if you're not counted, you don't count. In America, if we had focused on the black population for COVID, and known that black people would bear the brunt of COVID, we would have far less deaths. But in, you know, the city of Chicago, it was over 50% of the people were black who were dying, and we only make up 30% of the population. In Milwaukee, it's over 60% of the people who died of COVID are black. We have to focus, white people have to focus more on what they feel and think about black people in their lives. And if black people aren't in their lives, why is that? And how can they create intimate relationships with black people? But I don't want white allyship. White allyship to me is a type of violence, which allows white people to eschew reflection on their own racism. I think it's more important for white people to sit and listen to what people of color have to say and what black people have to say, to divorce themselves from their knee-jerk reaction of anger and hostility and wanting to say, I'm not like that. That's one of the dangers of me giving you examples of racism. This is a way for people to say, phew, oh, I didn't do that. Oh, goodness, that's so bad. It's a way to individualize experiences of racism while not looking at the fact that you're participating as a white person, you're actually participating wherever you go, wherever you walk through society and not have to think about race. You are participating in this act of violence against black people, which is racism. So I really implore you to stop thinking about allyship, to stop doing it. It's not actually productive in getting us to actually see each other. Because your idea of allyship has nothing to do with my lived experience. I mean, how could it be? I'm an ally. Okay, all right. Are you going to stop the police from beating me? I mean, I had police put guns to my head in Chicago. I'm black. As I said before, I'm black before I'm a conductor. I don't have a t-shirt that says, I'm safe, I'm black. You know, I'm not a thief. I'm not a rapist. I'm not a murderer. I'm not a drug dealer. I'm not a thug. I'm a conductor. I don't have a t-shirt that has this on. And no amount of allyship is going to change the fact that people see me as a black person before I'm a conductor. So that's my take on allyship.
What does it mean for music universities? How could we reform a university to implement this knowledge, which goes away from saying, yes, I'm an ally, I sign petitions. How could we actually implement an actual reform?
Well, there's a lot of a slew of things, and I just wrote down just a few things that we could do. We need to have racial sensitivity training, because the fact is that most whites and Asians, which make up our conservatories, are not socialized with Blacks. They didn't grow up with Blacks. Their most intimate relationships aren't with Blacks. As I said, in America, we have the statistic that 75% of white people don't live around Black people, which makes the self-reporting of racism suspicious. That makes sense. So white people say, I never hear about racism. Well, you don't live around Black people, so you don't hear about it. In our conservatories, I think that would be very much the case, where you have large proportion of Asian, Eastern European, white. That's the same thing at Oberlin Conservatory, where I went, other music schools. It's the typical racial demographic. So we need to have racial sensitivity training, particularly with Blacks. Controversial thing that I want to mention. There's a lot of focus in Germany on gender discrimination. And in most jobs that I've seen, it says women and people who are disabled first. And they ignore people of color, because in Germany, we're very uncomfortable talking about race and discrimination because of the Nazi time and all of this sort of thing. But we, in America, when we came up with the affirmative action laws in the 70s, they were intended to correct disparities in employment and schooling among the Black population. Of course, when we were made citizens in 1868, all rights were taken away. We weren't allowed to go to school. Then the Civil Rights Act of 1964 came along. We still weren't allowed to go to school. Then in the 70s, they made an Affirmative Action Act. But the only way to pass the Affirmative Action law was to allow to throw in their women. But what happened when they said women, it was white women who were getting all the opportunities. So we see that reflected in the conducting profession. We see that in academia. White women get these opportunities, not Black women, not women of color, but white women. So we need to know that affirmative action is actually white women affirmative action. If we need to have really true racial affirmative action, which is going to be getting people of color into these positions. In music, that means not just white and Asians who are overrepresented, that means Black people, increasing opportunities. I think universities need to be the change that they want to see. And this means they need to include all of society. Visual advertising, it should reflect minorities. It should reflect the lowest level of minorities, not the majority. We know that orchestras are mostly white and Asian. So you need to inspire us to see something different in your visual advertising, okay? I think the ideal music school represents the lowest common denominator in society, which are Black people. Black people are some of the least represented in classical music. And if you can address this in society, you'll actually redress discrimination for everybody, including white women. What people don't realize, they think, oh, well, if I just go for Black people, that's racist, and it's just focusing. No, you'll do it for gays and lesbians. You'll do it for Latinos. You'll do it for Asians in certain areas of classical music, and you'll also do it for white women. It's like a pyramid. White men are at the pyramid of everything, and if you go from the very, very bottom, the Black people, if you work this way, you'll push everybody else above us on the racial hierarchy upwards. As I said, racial sensitivity training is imperative for faculty, staff, and students. We have to learn to grant cultural membership to all people in classical music, not just whites of European descent. And this must be trained into the academy very early. The curriculum must reflect we must have Black composers in the curriculum. When I was growing up, we had very few Black composers. A lot of us exist, just like there's Black conductors. Many people have never seen a Black conductor. They've never heard of a Black composer. And this is a racist failure of our music education system. They have to learn. And then what happens is they learn implicitly that Black composers aren't good, that Black conductors aren't good, and Black musicians are inferior because they never see us. Additionally, it's the same with music history. It must be told with POC, people of color, in mind. And we must realize that the color of sound literally changes depending on whose hands music is in. Blacks must occupy leading permanent artistic positions. So this means you need Black conductors, and they need to be in tenured positions. white students and Asian students need to see that Black conductors are in positions of ultimate musical authority, that we're not the janitor, that we're not just a lecturer in a position that could be terminated. We're not just window dressing for diversity, but we're actually a fixture within the institutions. And we need to be in very visible positions. And I also, just as a conductor, I actually only know one major Black conducting teacher in the world. And that's very sad. There's a great stigmatization of Black conducting students. Many of my colleagues have told me that Blacks are never good enough to pass the video audition. Blacks aren't good enough to pass the testing. And as I said before, they accept a lot of white and Asian students, particularly in Germany. And these students are given the support through all different means to pursue the profession, whereas Black conductors have been highly stigmatized as not being capable arbiters of Western classical music. And so I appear, I'm like a unicorn. And it's crazy what my academic colleagues tell me. It's like I'm not Black or something. They can't see. They just, oh, Blacks aren't good at this. Oh, Blacks, they don't like this. Oh, they just do rap. And they tell me all sorts of racist things, like I'm not, you know, Black or something. So I know that sometimes Blacks may lack the experience, but it doesn't mean we lack the experience sometimes because we haven't been given the opportunity, but it doesn't mean we lack the potential to be great. So those are just a few things I think universities, particularly in Germany, could focus on.
Yeah, you have come to this point. You mentioned earlier that classical music, there's a saying that says music is a universal language, like music unifies us. And you've somehow disagreed with that. Do you feel it's somehow a romanticizing cover up for the structural discrimination, which is very clearly a huge issue in the musical professional world?
Music should unify, ideally, society. Music should bring us together. As the great philosopher and sociologist Pierre Bourdieu said, that music is the only art form that goes directly to the human spirit, which is very powerful, which means we can change the racist conscience of society through music. I was going to talk about this a little bit later, but I'll just do it now. When we think about Mr. Hitler, Mr. Hitler knew that he needed Wagner to inspire the German people to racist means. He needed Wagner to divide the people. He couldn't just do it through his brilliant oration and passionate speeches. He needed music. So think about, when you hear the Meistersinger overture and it comes on the radio, and before a speech, you know, da-da! Pom 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 pom. What does that make you feel like as a German? Oh my God, this is my music, this is my land, this is my language, this is my country, I'll do anything for it, right? And that's, he knew the power of Wagner's music to do this. But now we can use music. It's a saying in English, a bit of the hair of the dog that bit you. We need to use music to counterbalance the division of class and racism that it's created in society. So we can use music to a positive means rather than an evil means, which I feel that is still being perpetuated throughout society. I mean, there's no other genre where you think, oh, all white European people, all white composers, all white performers, all white audiences, audience member. What we're finding out during COVID, orchestras are failing, opera companies are failing. There's several orchestras in America that aren't paying their musicians. Not only that, they have no health insurance, something you don't have to think about in Europe. The orchestras are going out of business because we found out that whites playing whites for whites isn't working anymore. What happens in classical music is that white people have hoarded culture. They've hoarded cultural capital. They've hoarded cultural capital. Classical music is rife with cronyism. They give people that are like themselves opportunity, and they eschew everybody else. Orchestras have nothing to do with their communities, nothing to do with their neighborhoods. And in America, they don't reflect the population of their neighborhoods. You can have a city like Baltimore, which is 67% Black. Nobody in the orchestra is Black. Hardly anybody in the audience is Black. Nobody in the administration is Black. None of the guest artists are Black. The composers aren't Black. And yet they're some of the highest paid people in the community. Why should the orchestra exist? for only rich bourgeois white people from the suburbs to come and listen to the orchestra every week. And they're constantly striking to ask for more money. It doesn't make sense to me. It doesn't work out. What is the purpose of this music? What is it? Right now, classical music only in white hands is failing. It's not working. Whereas you look at all genres from the African diaspora, they're thriving. Think about Beyonce. You know, Beyonce right now is probably planning her next tour. Why? Because she connects to the daily lives of people. She's every woman. Everybody can see themselves in her somehow. Everybody can't see themselves in classical music, and it's a problem. What I worry about as an artist, first and foremost, is I want to take Beethoven and I want to put him into the future with as least harm as possible. That means everybody needs to hear him. Everybody needs to feel a part of his music, and everybody needs to perform him. Right now, that's not happening.
Is it at all possible to have an inclusive classical music scene, since classical music itself is based on white Western and Eurocentric culture?
I mean, of course. I mean, you know, think about this. Should African Americans only play pop music? I mean, we let white people play pop music, right? You know, just like pop music, as I said before, classical music, it doesn't have a color. It belongs to everyone. Music from the African-American diaspora is the single greatest export of American culture. When you hear pop music, Michael Jackson or anybody like this, when you hear that, or Beyonce, when you hear that, you think American, Americana. It's the sound of Americana. And all of this music is doing very well, and classical music is dying. And as I've talked about before, exclusivity through white supremacy in classical music, it's the purpose of classical music is white supremacy, actually. And our musical institutions in America, we hire one white European conductor after another, because we think anything that's close to European culture, that's authentic, and that's going to bring us closer to the music. These people are typically old, but still the orchestras fail. And seasons all over the world, orchestra seasons all over the world are getting smaller. The Berlin Philharmonic used to play four nights a week. Now they play three. You know, the concert house used to have an ABC series. Now they just have an A and B series. It's happening in Germany too. Ensembles, like I said, are not paying their musicians. The Indianapolis Symphony is not paying their musicians. They're not giving them any health insurance. The Fort Wayne Symphony won't play this year. The Kennedy Center, they've reduced their fee, but they didn't want to give them health insurance. So many orchestras don't have health insurance right now in the United States of America, and they also have no money. I think the better question is to ask, what do we lose when only white people play classical music? And from my perspective as a Black conductor, I believe our music testifies to our resilience as people. So how did I get here in front of you today? This is a question that you need to ask yourself if you want to be a white ally as a white person. How did I get here? So you got to understand that when the Constitution was created, I wasn't at the table in America. I was an animal. I was three-fifths human. At the end of the Civil War in 1865, supposedly we got citizenship, but that wasn't ratified until 1869. Immediately, those rights as a human being were taken away through Jim Crow, through segregation, through many things. We weren't allowed to go to school with white people and to schools until the 1960s, but still schools remain segregated to this day. Because we didn't gain civil rights, we have another Civil Rights Act of 1964. There were lynchings. There has been a lot of killing. These lynchings continue. Today, as we've seen with George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and Ahmaud Arbery, it continues. So how far have we really gotten? Not very far, but yet somehow I became an orchestral conductor. I beat out over 402 people in the Schulte International Competition, where I was the only Black person there. I'm always the only Black person in white spaces, but somehow I was able to be successful. It's very rare, but you must treasure the history that I come with. And because of this history, I believe Black people are able to create interpretations that are like a diamond, because I believe that systemic racism has a really profound effect on the music that we create. And I believe music through the rungs of oppression, it gives us something more to play and sing and conduct about. Antony Dvorak, one of the greatest advocates for African-American music and musicians, said that the music of the people is like a rare and lovely flower growing amidst encroaching weeds. Thousands pass it while others trample it underfoot, and thus the chances are that it will perish before it is seen by the one discriminating spirit who will prize it above all else. And this is important because allowing more people to hear and play classical music, it increases its longevity and it makes richer music. So this is why, you know, it's crazy that classical music remains in only primarily in white hands and functions and profits off of white supremacy. It's imploding the industry. As you know, nobody's listening to classical music. It has no utility in the majority of people's lives. They don't listen to it in the car. They don't listen to it to go to the gym. They don't go listen to it to go to the club and for entertainment purposes. They look at it as some sort of serious esoteric thing because it's been disconnected. So we're shooting ourselves in the foot if we only allow white people, white musicians, and people who can assimilate only into whiteness to perform this music.
Do you feel that there are differences between racism against black people and other ethnic groups, for example, Asians?
Yes, and this is a very, very, very important thing and a touchy subject to mention. We know that Asians in classical music, they're overrepresented. And this is because they occupy a higher place on the racial hierarchy. They've enjoyed an ability to assimilate into white society much easier than other minority groups. There's less symbolic boundaries in terms of skin color. The skin color is lighter in hair texture, and it allows somewhat physical assimilation also into German conservatories. But what the truth is that many black musicians have reported that a lot of their racism has come from Asian people, which makes sense in terms of population, but it also has to do with the relationship between Asians and blacks in society in general. There's been some rather high profile instances of racism from Asians lately. There was Matthew Chen, a cellist, a Juilliard graduate, who just won a position in the San Diego Symphony. He starts in the fall. And because we have free speech in America, we're able to actually produce videotapes like you saw of George Floyd and also text messages from people and publish these things to expose racism. And his text messages at Juilliard were discovered where he uses the N-word, where he calls black people niggers. And he says that black people only get places in the conservatory because they're affirmative action, that they can't play, that they're really bad. He talks about women as black women as bitches. He is very defamatory. My experience, I personally in conservatories didn't have a lot of racism from Asians, but then when I went into competitions and conducting, I did. And also my student Typher Yam that I mentioned before at Brown University, who physically assaulted me, was an Asian student. Black people have been forced to socialize with other races in order to survive. There's no way to have any success in any industry as a black person without socializing with white people. Asians, a lot of Asians come from countries and communities that are monoracial. So this means the majority of students in the conservatory, they lack socialization with black people. And many of these kids, they come from monocolored, tight-knit social circles, and they don't resemble at all the real world. And so they develop malignant scripts of racism, stereotypes, implicit bias, colorblind racism, egalitarianism, meritocracy, entitlement, and neoliberalism. And they only see black people on TV and, you know, rap videos and basketball and things like this. And they develop stereotypes. And this it's definitely true of the Asian students that are in our academies. And so this is why we do have a clash of cultures between Asians and black students, because there's, you know, Asians don't know about us and they have a lot of anxiety about us, but also the fact that we've been absent from classical music means they have a lot of inferiority. On the other side, white Germans report that Asians copy the German style and that they actually don't have a lot of originality in their sound and their music making. And they also, a lot of Europeans resent Asians coming and taking all of their jobs. I've had at least four musicians from several different Berlin orchestras tell me that they resent Asians coming and taking their jobs. And it's disgusting, you know, when somebody says this. But as I said before, globalization, because of globalization, they feel that these musicians as foreigners are invaders. They're invading their workplace, that they're taking their jobs, that they're invading their sacred, intimate spaces, neighborhoods, and concert halls. And this is a symptom of, or another manifestation of white supremacy. Germans and white Europeans continue to say that our culture is superior, nobody else can match us, and this is what's creating, in part, the racial divide in classical music. I think we informally also, we advantage people that are most like ourselves, and that this leads to the exclusion of people of lower status. In classical music, this would be Black people. And this manifests, this exclusion manifests in racial discrimination, and also it manifests in the overselection of Asian musicians. So teachers say, oh, it's an Asian student, must have a high degree of technical ability, must be really great. There are stereotypes of Asians as being smart, being very studious, being very polite, and very much able to assimilate and get along. And then there's stereotypes and implicit biases against Black musicians, which cause us to be discouraged out of the genre. So sometimes we self-exclude ourselves. We go into choral music, we go into gospel music, we go into jazz music, because we had the orchestra conductor or the orchestra, the conducting teacher say, oh, you're not good at that, why don't you go into something like this? So you see how socialization affects different races, but also affects the way people of color interact with each other. And it's important that white people understand this, because people of color are not a monolith. We have different lived experiences. Whiteness affects us differently. I think that's really a good take home, that whiteness affects different people of color differently. And it affects us differently for many, many different reasons. But primarily in classical music, it affects us differently based on the implicit bias that white people have against minority groups.
Great, thank you. Does the current Black Lives Matter movement have any effects on classical music, or is it showing, is there more awareness for the structural, institutionalized racism?
Well, you know, yes and no, in a way, because it's not having the profound effects on institutionalized and structural racism that I would like to see. What I'm sort of trying to create is a Black Lives Matter movement in classical music. And until this year, I was definitely the only conductor that was speaking openly and directly about racism. But honestly, I really was one of the only classical musicians that was speaking openly and directly about racism. People laughed at me. They called me stupid and crazy, because when you speak about racism, it makes white people angry, and white people are the tastemakers and they hold all the keys to the profession. And so it makes Black people get very nervous and scared to talk about our lived experience of racism in front of white people. But as I told you before, I'm Black before I'm a conductor. And people already think that my Blackness is aggression. Even if I can produce sublime tones for an orchestra, you know, Black people are stereotyped as difficult, dangerous, arrogant, rude, angry, condescending, temperamental, scary. And, you know, small disputes, small things at work or in the orchestra or just in daily life, they're usually met with impatience, hostility, threats of death or termination in society, whereas whites readily receive empathy and benefit of the doubt. If white people aren't comfortable with my Blackness and the fact that my lived experience is different, this is not my problem. And in the end, I know that white people are only going to let me get as far in the profession as they want me to. So why should I hide my blackness and pretend, oh, everything, la, 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 is really wonderful. Because I've really felt that this has been a great disadvantage that my black colleagues have been doing. They don't want to talk necessarily about racism because they don't want to make white people uncomfortable and lose opportunities. Trying to pretend to be somebody that you're not is extremely stressful. Racial stereotypes cause great stress and anxiety, which adds to what Michelle Lamont calls the wear and tear of daily life. The average black man lives a decade less than a white person, and this is not genetically related. It's due to stress-related illnesses, such as heart disease, high blood pressure, diabetes, kidney disease, and a milieu of other cancers and illnesses. Often stereotypes come from a lack of socialization with blacks, so this is not being solved by the Black Lives Matter movement. And I don't necessarily feel any personal effects, but I'm very hopeful about Germany specifically. I know that demanding racial equity in classical music, it's not a moral political issue. It's a human issue. And it's grounded, my argument's grounded in history, sociology, psychology, and neuroscience. And because I believe in using the lived experience of people as primary resources towards excavating racism. But specifically in Germany, Germany is the only Western society where culture came before politics. So music as an art form, as I said before, goes directly to the human spirit. And we have to change the racist conscience of people by moving their spirit. That means Germany has an advantage over the US. And so now I believe in Germany, we can use this great German culture and great German music to help bring people together. But the United States, I'm not so hopeful.
Are there already existing structures or initiatives, maybe even you have met or seen in Germany and or in the general and the classical music field, which we need to strengthen and support and develop further?
Well, yes. I mean, there were some articles that came out in the New York Times and Washington Post. America is talking, of course, very vigorously about these things. And so some of the things that have come up were to take the curtain down for auditions at orchestras, because only 1.8% of US orchestras are black. The Latinx population has increased over the last 4 to 6 years, but the black population has remained at 1.8%. And black conductors are between 2 and 6% of US orchestras. So in terms of orchestra musicians, in America, we audition behind a screen, and the screen comes down, or a curtain, and the screen comes down in the last round. And so there's talk about taking this screen, leaving this screen down so that we can see the race of people and we can enact affirmative racial action. This doesn't decrease the merits of the musician. Meritocracy, which is a whole other subject, this idea of meritocracy comes from neoliberalism, the idea that we all start from zero. Women start from zero, just like white men, and black people and LGBTQ people and Muslim people of different religions, they all start from zero, which isn't true. Black people start from at least a -100 and have to work twice as hard to have to achieve half as much. And so we're not compensating for this lack of equity by leaving the curtain up. So one of the things that people are thinking about is taking down the curtain. In America, boards of directors, which are all white, they decide who is the music director. So as we know that the conductor has the greatest responsibility in shaping the overall artistic vision of a concert or an opera, the musical aspect of an opera production. But we're not being hired for masterworks concerts, canonic repertoire, such as Brahms and Beethoven, subscription concerts. We're not being hired for those. A little bit more in Germany, we're being hired, but you know, not at all in the United States. And so what this says is that we don't have cultural access to the center of classical music. We don't have cultural membership. So we're talking about boards of directors becoming more diverse and inviting black people into boards of directors and expanding the racial demographics of administrators, there's one Black artistic administrator in all the orchestras in the United States. One. And the artistic administrator in the United States hires all the soloists and conductors and designs the season, the theme of the season. They have a lot of power because the music directors pretty much decide their programs and invite the soloists they want, but all the other conductors are under the artistic administrator purview. So we need to develop programs that are going to expand cultural membership and place Blackness in the center and remove whiteness. This is what white people need to learn, is to remove their feelings from the center and replace it with Blackness. Or actually, I mean, funny, just anybody else's feelings besides white feelings, because all of society operates around white feelings. Of course, we know this in Germany because there's hardly any representation of Black people in the legislature. All the laws are catered to Black people. There's no census, which means if you're not counted, you don't count. There's no racial census in Germany, which means the government says everybody's the same. Everybody has the same lived experience, which also means the government says racism doesn't exist. You know, you're not thinking about the real, like down the road, the ramifications of not having a racial census. But in the United States, those are some of the initiatives, but none of these things have been universally put in place. I find that all of this is a bunch of lip service. Also, we need to realize that racism is not something that is going to be end. You're not going to flip a switch. We're not going to see an end in your lifetime or my lifetime. You can't replace racism like a carburetor. What needs to happen is white people have to develop the ability to reflect. White people have to decide that Black people are worthy arbiters of classical music, and they have to invite us in. They have to give us chances and opportunities like they give other white conductors. There's a lot of white people, white conductors, who are on major rosters, major artist management rosters, who are put in positions that they don't relatively deserve. But they look like the audience. They look like the orchestra. They stereotypically look like the conductor. They apprentice with powerful conductors who they emulate, and therefore they get opportunities. Where to somebody like me, I don't look like hardly anyone. And I'm not relatable to orchestras, and I'm not relatable to administrations, and I'm an outsider in many, many regards. And so this type of implicit bias is something that white conductors are particularly able to capitalize on. And so orchestras have to realize that really, if you want to change the way that the industry looks, you want to allow more people in the center, you need to start hiring Black conductors for subscription Masterworks concerts, not just family concerts, not this Martin Luther King concerts in America, not this Black History Month concert, not 4th of July, not Christmas concerts. You need to hire us for Bruckner, you know, which I did in Jena and had great success with. You need to hire us for Beethoven. You need to hire us for Mozart. You need to hire us for as music director of your orchestras. You know, going back to Germany, Germany has given so many Black conductors their first chance here. You've had Dean Dixon in Frankfurt. You had the first Black conductor of the Gewandhaus, was an American, the first Black conductor of the Gewandhaus Orchestra, George Byrd from my home state of North Carolina. Kazim Abdullah, my friend, was in Aachen until last year. You give a lot of Black conductors a chance, but it's not enough. But it's more than America. So in a way, that's why I'm here, you know, because you've given me my first chance and opportunity. So there is a lot of hope, but there's great room for improvement.
Are there also like said structures which you can see at universities or which you maybe have experienced yourself at your university, certain structures which we could develop further or strengthen?
Well, I think I need to comment on institutionalized racism and how that manifests in academia. You have an all-white department. The department wants to diversify. They hire a Black person. The Black person comes with a completely different culture, completely different idea of managing themselves, completely different idea and experience and lived experience and history. As I said before, you know, 75% of white people in America don't live around Black people. They don't understand, they don't know about Black people, but yet this one Black faculty member is supposed to get along immediately with all white people. And how do we do it? We immediately adapt to whiteness. We code switch. We change the way we move, the way we talk, the way we act, the way that we present ourselves and adapt to whiteness. This takes a toll on the psyche of the Black person. It makes us feel we're inferior. It makes us feel that we're not worthy. It makes us feel we're not good enough. It compromises our relationships in the workplace. It compromises our private, intimate relationships. It compromises our artistic efficacy. It brings us down. It does not bring us up. Think about, as a white person, you get to go into any space who you are. You get to be all of who you are. People ask me, what was your ideal goal? I would love to one day perform all of who I am. And I don't get to do that in my work with orchestras, and I don't get to do that, and certainly not in academia. This hasn't been my experience. Furthermore, the students have never been taught by a Black conductor or a Black professor even. Probably they haven't been taught by a Black teacher in their lives, but you come in as an authority figure and you expect white students and Asian students to immediately accept the Black teacher and say, aye, aye, sir, I do what you ask, I do everything. No, it doesn't work. It never works. And so Blacks in academia report often of feeling discriminated against, feeling overwhelmed, being stereotyped, racially profiled. When I went to Brown University, the first day I got there, the deputy provost told me, we hired you because you're Black. The second day, before the students met me, I got an email saying that you make us nervous and anxious to audition for the orchestra. A smear campaign came out in the newspaper. It came out in the student paper. A student physically assaulted me, an Asian student who wouldn't leave my classroom. He came and put his hand on my back and taunted me. This was all rewarded. Faculty and staff who never met me before criticized me. They didn't observe any of my classes, but took the word of white and Asian students that I made a nervous environment in the rehearsals, and I was fired from my position because of this. But yet no one observed my classes. Why? Because I'm not valuable. I was only valued for my brown skin because of diversity initiatives, because Brown University has a history of, their history was founded by selling Black slaves. They sold slaves to start the school. Harvard has the same. Most Ivy Leagues have a history of selling slaves to fund big projects like universities. It's not a big deal. But it's still in all of the policies of the institution. I was the first and only full-time Black faculty member in the history of Brown University. In the history of the music department. In the music department. So how can you expect, this to work out without having racial sensitivity training? How can you expect this to work out without giving the Black person room? And especially, I inherited a program that was completely disheveled. Kids were stealing instruments left and right and damaging instruments and coming to class whenever they wanted to because they felt entitled to their music education. They felt entitled to the professor. So how would you ever expect this to work? Globalization, looking at globalization, as people move around the world, we're becoming more separated as society. So what we need to do is find ways to socialize each other, socialize together. And music, of course, is one way to do this. Otherwise, it's going to continue to be like oil and vinegar. You constantly have to stir. It's always going to be separate. So this makes sense when we see refugee populations come to Germany. People thought that the German people were going to, hug and kiss them and welcome them in. No, it doesn't work like that when you have very different people coming together. There's problems that are created. There's problems when you have this in the orchestra. There's problems with this in academia. So we need to know that this is a problem. This isn't a moral issue. This isn't like, oh, I'm a bad person. I don't want to think about racism. It makes me feel bad. This is a sociological, systemic issue. It's like the air we breathe. It's the water. It's in the water. It's everywhere. And we need to be comfortable, learn to become comfortable with being uncomfortable talking about this so that we can prevent, very caustic and difficult situations from happening, racial violence, physical violence, verbal violence, that is tearing our society apart.
Thank you. I think there was a great last statement. I think we can take a lot of your advice and we'll hopefully learn from that a lot. Thank you very much for this interview, for your input.
Thank you. My pleasure.